Greetings once again. Scott, it's good to be with you.
Good to be with you, Stan. Good to be with everybody out there. Thanks for always saying, some of you say hi, like in the gathering space, if you're ZPCers, we always love that.
We sure do, and we're now into year... Oh, we've done 3 years now,
we've
right?
done 3 years. Yes. Well, I think we started about, March 20th, but we're into... Oh, yeah, we're March 26th. This is the start of year four.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up that, so you just said that.
Yeah, no, that's it. Anyway, but we have, and it's not just simple repetitive reiteration. We enjoy doing this with one another. So anyway, we're in Luke. We've been there since the fall and taking a fresh look at who Jesus is and the nature of his ministry.
Yeah.
And now we're midway through Luke chapter 8. How about if I pray and then I will give a little overview of our context and then you're going to lead us forward into a storm and into a demonized man.
Okay, sounds good.
Let me pray. Lord, again, we give you thanks that we have this opportunity to reflect with one another who you were and are and the nature of your ministry then and now. And so as we share, may we be listening to you and learning from you. This we ask in your name. Amen.
All righty. Amen. And again, we are this week back in Luke 8. So last week we were in the early part of Luke 8. Oh, but you're going to do context first.
I am.
But so I'm just jumping in. I'm flying.
You're on a roll. This is great. I was going to let you take it away.
No, you go. Give us a little bit. Give us a little more context of where we're going today. We still are in Luke 8, but why don't you give us a little context?
Well, where we have been, certainly in the fall, was the first six chapters. Well, that's not quite true. The first five chapters of Luke's gospel. And then as we began this calendar year, we moved into chapter six, which much of it is the Sermon on the Plain. And as we were finishing that, I think you and I recognized that with the Sermon on the Plain and now moving into chapter seven, we begin to see how Jesus lived what he taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get that wonderful, I think, connection that what he said is what he did, what he did is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'll just speak for myself, I know I can talk a much better game than I live.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that, you know, do what I say, not what I, no, yeah. Yeah, do what I say, not what I do.
I do.
That we have that adage that as kind of our cop-out. But that's not true for Jesus. So we really see him. So in chapter 7, he heals a centurion slave, a Gentile. We see the centurion's relationship with the Jewish community and with friends. But the issue there really is that Jesus is a person of authority. And with that, starting with chapter 7 and moving on into chapter 8, then we consistently see Jesus in a position of authority in one way or another. So after the centurion, then he heals the only begotten son of a widow, the widow of Nain. That's then followed by John the Baptist raising questions about Jesus' ministry. And as much as we like John, or at least I like John, John didn't have it all together. And he's sitting in prison, and did I back the wrong horse? It's a painful question for him. And so Jesus responds to that. That is followed then by a woman who, in my language, loved Jesus greatly.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes in off of the street, she anoints him, she kisses him, she dries his feet. It's a remarkable, and in some ways, an uncomfortable moment for many of us. But he accepts her responses and notes that if you love little, or if you've been forgiven little, you love little.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been forgiven greatly, you love greatly. That's, to me, a very sobering comment. Moving into chapter 8, Luke then notes the women that were very supportive of his of Jesus' ministry, and again, what we're seeing is Jesus reaches out to Gentiles, and that women are fundamental to this gospel experience what will eventually become the church. Then, as we did last week, we focused upon the parable of the sower and talked about the various soils.
Those four soils, yep.
Yep. But that Jesus will nonetheless produce a great bumper crop, even if his agrarian technique can be questioned. And, you know, you just throw this seed, broadcast it, but it's going to be a great crop.
Harvest, yeah.
Yeah, harvest, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And then, as we talked last week, then even Jesus' nuclear family had to come to some new understanding of who they are in relationship to him. And in my view, what he's doing is establishing a new family.
Right, as you said, opposed to the Adam and Eve family,
yes.
Which was blaming, not taking credit, even...
Hiding.
Cain, yep. And Abel, murder.
Yep.
Yep,
and we have carried on that family trait ever since.
Yeah.
Today, we will then see Jesus calming a sea, and we will see him dealing with a demonized man. And then next week, I believe, we will see Jesus relating yet to another woman and to a young girl, 12 years old, a daughter.
Okay.
And so here again, we see this emphasis upon women and their place. But that's next week. So that's kind of where we are at this moment in Luke's gospel. But for today, then, Scott, why don't you move us into Jesus at sea?
Yeah, so we're kind of doing two stories today, as many times as you break down the Gospel of Luke into parts. And I think to get through it, you know, at least sometime down the road in the future, you got to cover two stories at once on some weeks. And so the first story, we're looking at Luke 8, verses 22 through 25. Jesus calms the storm. Again, like a lot of these things, if you grew up in the church or Sunday school or any kind of Bible study, this will probably be a familiar passage to you. And then the second story, Jesus and Legion, healing the man who has a demon inside. So, all right, Stan. So there again, and we believe they're on the west side of the lake or the Sea of Galilee. And so Jesus said, let's go over to the other side of the lake. Well, as they're going, it says a squall, and the NIV comes down, or a storm comes down. And even says in verse 23, the boat is being swamped. They are in great danger. So I think physically, they're in danger.
You know? The Greek word there really talks about a whirlwind, and I noted that, I think it was yesterday, it could even be translated as a hurricane.
Okay.
Now, I don't think it was, but...
Right.
And these are seasoned...
Fishermen. Used to be
tossed around.
Absolutely, out on the water. So they're in great danger, Luke says. And the disciples went and woke Jesus. Jesus had fallen asleep.
Yes.
He's asleep.
He is very much asleep. Again, the Greek word would suggest that aphoupno, I believe, is the word. He's out.
He's out.
He's you know,
and this big storm's going on.
Storm's going on.
I tell you, my house, I've got a roof over my head. Usually when a big storm's going on, I'm awake, you know.
Yep.
But they say, Master, we're going to drown. We're going to die here. He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. I think, Stan, one thing here is that Jesus is showing he is Lord over nature.
Go for it.
Yeah, and similar to when he was talking about the centurion, and the centurion recognized that I'm a man under authority. I understand what authority is like. That's back in Luke 7. And so you just say the word, and my servant or my slave will be healed. And so the nature, the storm on the water, is also under Jesus' authority.
And notice again the disciples, they're afraid.
Absolutely.
One, I think that, well, first they were terrorized because they thought they were about ready to die.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So they've got that going on. Then Jesus calms it all down, and so now they're afraid and begin to ask one another, well, who is this?
Right. And I think one of the questions there is, who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him. So they don't know yet, huh? I think like us, you know, we're sometimes, I can be, maybe I won't throw everybody in this boat, to use that cliche, but I can be hard-headed, you know, and not accepting doubtful or such. And so... I'm actually, it actually feels a little good to be in good company with the disciples. You're like, Who is this guy? Yes, you got it. What do you think? He's been doing miracles and raising people from the dead. Who do you think he is? You know, so.
Yeah, and again, if I think the context, he's talked about this parable of the sower. Well, okay, isn't that a nice little story? But no, Right. Now we're seeing real life authority kinds of stuff.
Right, real life authority. Right, exactly.
I mean, I don't know how much sea travel you've done. I don't know that I've done a whole lot. But air travel, for instance, sometime recently I was reminded of somebody was talking about when they had in an airplane hit turbulence that they didn't, they thought they were going down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, all of a sudden we can, it's that same kind of, you're out of control. It is a natural phenomenon. And, you know, people will say, well, in an airplane, you just need to understand the bumps are like water.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Well, but sea can be terrorizing.
I'm actually let out to our listeners here, so I won't tell everybody, but I'll tell you, I'm actually a little bit afraid of the ocean. I don't actually like it that much. I think it's gorgeous. I love going to the beach. It's beautiful. I respect it, but I think for these kind of reasons, I think somewhere down in me, one of my fears is drowning in an ocean. I am not, so I don't like being out on the ocean in small boats.
No, I hear you. And I grew up in California on the Central Coast.
Yeah.
And even to the present, when I'm there, the power, the raw power of when the waves come crashing in. And I remember as a child where we would swim near Carmel, as opposed to Carmel.
Right, right.
But Carmel. There's a beach there that there are warning signs for undertow. I remember as a child, going out, and my family was watching, but you immediately are caught by that undertow, and the next thing I knew, I was some 10 to 15 feet out in the ocean.
Yeah.
And it's just, so yeah, the power
of the ocean. So it's real, even though they're on the Sea of Galilee, which is interesting. If you've been there, or if you don't know, it's a lake. And on a clear day, you can see from one end to the other, north and south, and you can see from side to side, east to west. So it's only a matter of miles across.
Yes, so it's not big, but you and I have been there. There's that escarpment.
Yes.
High above, 1,000 feet above.
On the east side, right?
From which winds can immediately come
down.
And whip.
Yep.
And exactly. So you're in a cauldron just being whipped around.
Absolutely. So a couple of questions, then I want to ask you to talk about a couple of these key words and thoughts. You know, have you ever experienced such a fearful moment? What did you do? What did your response suggest? And then perhaps with whom in this incident do you identify? You know, I'd probably be like one of the disciples.
Oh, I'm right.
I was saying. I can get a little freaked out if there's a storm on the ocean. So
yeah, and Jesus is asleep, and their language essentially is, don't you care that we are perishing?
Yeah,
they were going to go down.
Yeah,
but I think what's to me also telling here is he rebuked these natural elements. It's the same word when he rebukes an evil spirit.
Okay, good. Yeah,
same word, Greek word.
Good. So yeah, again, he is Lord of nature. We're going to see in the next story something perhaps a little similar, but. Talk about any of these key words in the Greek here, Stan.
I did just a little, sometime along the line, I think I'd share that in the gospel accounts, the word pisteuo, which we translate, it's a verb to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little checking earlier and realized it's in John's gospel where John consistently, for 98 times in his gospel, uses that verb, believe.
Okay.
He does not use the noun, pistis, which is the noun word for faith or belief. I like the idea that belief is very much an action as opposed to something that's static.
Okay.
But I can't push that too hard. 11 times in Luke's gospel, it's the noun.
Well, that's interesting, I think, and where the Greek helps us, where we read faith in Luke and believe in John, it comes from the same root word.
It is.
Pisteo or pistis.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's great.
Yep. So I can't push that too hard. But in this instance, Jesus is asking, you know, where's your faith? You have little faith, as the noun, and that's, of course, that's more than legitimate. And I think we've already touched about his, on his sleeping. Oh, one other little thought is that they say master. It is the word epistates, which in some translations can be teacher.
Okay.
And the other gospels, it is that would be didaskalos, would be the word for teacher. Okay. Here we're dealing with Luke, the Gentile, and so he is probably drawing more from his Gentile Greek world.
Okay.
And so epistates is one is a person who stands over and has authority or a power.
Okay, good.
And I'm going to use that as a transition.
Please go.
Let's go on to the next incident, which is they crossed the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrified. Probably it's early morning when they get to the other side, and who greets them?
Demoniac, are you saying?
Yeah.
from the region of the Gerasenes.
Yeah.
Again, across the lake, so they're going from west to east, aren't they? Where you talk about where there's this escarpment, but over there. And then... Jesus is met, says in verse 27, again, we're in Luke 8, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town, and for a long time this man had worn no clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs, which I wrote down in my notes. That's scary.
Oh, it is.
There's this naked, crazy guy. Let's put it in my terms. There's this naked, crazy guy who lives in the cemetery.
Right.
I don't want to go see him.
Let's get back on the boat and we'll go back to the other side.
Yeah.
This
he's got
is
a
nuts.
Demon. Yeah.
That's right.
And he lives in a cemetery.
Right.
So verse 28, Stan, Jesus saw him. He cried out. This man cried out, fell at his feet, shouting, "What do you want to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" He recognizes who Jesus is, right?
He sure does. And it's evil. See, notice it's
evil,
yes. That recognizes who Jesus is.
Yeah.
It's not the rational, moral, good people that recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
But from the beginning, it is these evil forces that recognize him. And notice also, he comes out to Jesus. It's not like he's trying to get away from Jesus. Where do you go?
Yeah.
I mean, where does evil go?
I don't know. Is that...
Well, I mean, if you're dealing with Jesus, how do you get away from him?
I don't think you do you?
I don't think so. Sorry, I'm being
rhetorical. Okay, I kind of thought you were. All right.
Yeah, no, but yeah, it's.
He came out to him. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not.
And he cried out and fell at his feet. Verse 28.
And that cry is no weak little. I mean, he is crying.
Yeah. He says, "I beg you, don't torture me." At the end of verse 28, for Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out. Many times it had seized him. He was chained by hand and foot, kept under guard. He had broken his chains and been driven by the demon into solitary places. And Jesus asked his name, and he says, "Legion," because there are many, many demons that had gone into him.
Notice the language then, "Don't torment me." And you came, I think your NIV has torture, but...
Yeah, but is it torment? Go ahead.
To torment is most often a torturing.
Okay.
That's going on. So whether in our... parlance, whether that's waterboarding or I don't know what, it would be worse. You know, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the demons that are in the legion want to go into the abyss.
Yes.
So what's the abyss?
Well, it's got to be some dark pit. I mean, I mean, we will talk about an abyss. I mean, we could talk about hell.
Yeah,
same kind of thing
going on.
Okay. But notice what you just did, which is here in this incident. At one moment, we talk about this man had an evil spirit, singular.
Yeah, yeah.
Then in another moment, in the same account, we'll talk about many demons in him. And there's a... obviously, at some level, there's a great confusion of personality.
Oh, okay.
Now, in our psychological world, then we can begin to talk in those kinds of ways. But but even as this is written, and I'm not doubting what we're reading here, is, you know, are we dealing with one? Are we dealing with many?
Mm-hmm.
And legion in the Roman army was 6,000.
Wow. Okay.
Could be as many as 6,000 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So this man is truly tormented. He is very animal-like.
Yeah.
And, you know, breaking the bonds, and they couldn't contain him. He's wild.
Right. So they, the demons, plural, ask not to be thrown into or ordered into the abyss, this dark place or hell. So instead, Jesus sees a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside, and the demons beg Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission.
So and notice the language there that he gave. So they're asking, but this wouldn't happen unless he gave them permission to go into these pigs.
So he has authority.
Very much so. And I'm going to be speaking more from ignorance or lack of experience, that it would seem that demonic power must somehow inhabit living creatures or beings, or otherwise they have no power and they're back in the pit.
Yeah. So when the demons came out, they went into the pigs and rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. So what do you think about anything about that? Well, now they're dead.
Well, and that they're swine or pigs tells us that these people are
Gentiles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're dealing
Jews wouldn't.
Oh,
have
no.
Pigs.
No. No. So we're in the Gentile world here. Yeah. And so the swine herds, you know, this is their economy.
Yeah.
That now are floating in the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah. So the people, some saw it happen. They run off to report it. The people in the town come out. They see this man is dressed. The demon-possessed man now is dressed in his right mind, and he's sitting at Jesus' feet. Those who had seen it told out the demon-possessed man had been cured, and people asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So could it be they're overcome with fear because this unbelievable thing has happened? This man they're afraid of, this naked, crazy man who's possessed by demons and lives in a cemetery, is now cured. He's dressed and he's sitting quietly at Jesus' feet, meaning he sees Jesus also as authority now.
You got it.
And they have fear and they ask Jesus to leave. Why wouldn't they ask Jesus? It's a little bit of a rhetorical question, but I'll ask you to go ahead and answer. Why wouldn't they ask Jesus to stay? Because apparently this Jesus man is great.
Well, and I will speak from a Gentile perspective, since I am a Gentile, is financial economics important to us?
Yeah.
And Jesus has just destroyed a good portion of their economy, mm-hmm. or at least it appears that that's what's going on. And so this, we don't want him, you know, so it's hurting our pocketbook.
Right, right.
So we even in our own culture, Thomas Jefferson, in putting together the Commonwealth, in writing up the Commonwealth for Virginia, had a section on religious freedom or liberty. And his one line is, "I don't care if my neighbor worships 20 gods or no god at all, as long as my neighbor does not break my bone or pick my pocket."
Oh, okay.
Well, I think that's our fundamental foreign policy. As long as you don't hurt me physically, and as long as you don't hurt me economically, then you can do whatever you want to do. All that was free. but I do think what we see here is that they just don't want Jesus around here.
Yeah.
He's trouble.
Okay. Yeah.
He's, you know, and we don't know how this guy is now in his right mind, but we don't want him.
Right. So he is. So then to finish it out, Legion, this man says, he begged to go with Jesus, but Jesus says, no, return home and tell how much God has done for you. So the man did that.
And I think that Jesus was asking him to do probably the most difficult thing to be done, which is to live your faith at home.
Mm. Why is that so difficult?
Because in my little world, Mary is around me more than anybody else, and she knows what I'm like.
Yeah.
When I'm happy, when I'm not happy, if I'm a grump, if I'm moody, if I'm insensitive, she knows.
Right. And my family does too.
And so it is, I think, to live our faith at home is the most difficult.
Mm-hmm. And this man, though, could have. We talked last week about the light. You know, let your light shine. Don't hide the lamp. Let it shine for all those who come into the room. if you're doing that at home, it's going to make could make a great difference.
You got it.
And but they're going to be skeptical, most likely.
Oh, mercy.
Especially with this guy.
Yeah, so, how, yeah. You know, how are we going to let him, you know, how can he come back and live with us?
Right, right.
And who knows what pain and anguish that the family went through because of him. That's going to take a little. It's not going to happen just overnight. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time. Mm-hmm. But that's where we see when faith is really faith. Mm-hmm. It takes time, however, to see the fruit. When we, again, we're back to the parable of the sower.
Right, right.
Same kind of thing. And sometimes I'm afraid that we put one another in a bind, expecting people to articulate the faith, which they can well articulate it, but the actions sometimes are not quite there, or the maturity is not there.
Right. So talk to us just for a moment about some of these key words, and then we'll do our questions.
Some of them that we have already dealt with, torment, torture, we've dealt with that. Okay. We're dealing with swine. I like that the man was under self-control, if you will, and it's made up of two words meaning wisdom and thinking.
How do you say that in the Greek?
Sophrosune.
Okay.
It's one of the fruits of the Spirit, I believe, but I'd have to double-check on that. But I think that's self-control. If you remember in Galatians, where it's the ninth fruit, moderation or self-control is somehow we'll translate that.
Okay.
And certainly we've talked about fear. I think we've hit them, Scott.
Okay, good. Why don't you, I think I read the questions in this first part. Why don't you read the questions for this part?
Okay.
If you would.
If, as the disciples had just experienced having escaped death by drowning, what might you have thought or felt upon being greeted by Legion? So given a life and death experience, what would you have felt if you then greeted Legion? What power is there in a name? And we didn't talk much about this, but Jesus asked Legion for his name.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what's going on is what power resides in a name. And then a third question, what motivated the Gerasenes to ask Jesus to leave them? And we talked about that and we talked about that for what it's
worth. We did. I think those first two, just a moment, but it could be frightening because, they were escaped from drowning and then in the sea, and now there's this crazy man, this demon-possessed man, but Jesus takes care of it again.
He does.
We talked about that he was Lord over nature, and now he's Lord of the supernatural.
Very much so.
And he uses the man's name to command him to get his attention, as we can use names today. So,
it's there. Great. It's both of these are wonderful incidents, and from the standpoint of even being able to imagine them, and if you were to put them in a video and I don't know, maybe this those who have put together The Chosen have dealt with this incident. But anyway, these are powerful moments.
They are. All righty. Well, let's.
Why did you pray?
I will be happy to do so. All right. God, again, what a great time it is to get together and to look at your word here in the Gospel of Luke. Thank you for what we've read here in what we call chapter 8. And we thank you for it, God, that we see again that you are Lord over nature and control of even the storms and the storms on the sea or the lake, as well as you are Lord over the supernatural, that you can control demons and send them out and rescue this man. God, help us to make you Lord of our lives as well, that as we learned last week, we could have the light of Christ in us and let the lamp shine in our lives. Help us to do that, to have faith that we might follow you. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Good to be together, Scott.
Good to be together. Thank you. See you next time. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.